From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of September, USDA Grain Stocks Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about that Grain Stocks Report with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. He'll help us take a look at the agricultural futures markets as well. We'll hear an update on rural broadband across the state of Illinois and how a subcommittee on agriculture from Congress is thinking about updating the ability of producers and rural Americans to get hold of the Internet. And then, as we close out our program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast and take a look at the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, will be on hand right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Checking the numbers as they settle up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures finish sharply lower. December wheat at $6.09 and a quarter, down 45 cents today. March at $6.46 and a half, down 39 and a quarter, and May wheat at $6.68 and a half, 31 and a half lower. July futures of next year $6.76. That's $6.76 and three quarters, down 28 and a quarter. Hard red July at $7.31 in Kansas City for next year, down 28 and a half cents. Corn pit in Chicago $5.92 and a half, down the 40 cent trading limit. March at 6.05 and three quarters, down 40, in the May at 6.13 and a half, 39 and three quarters lower. July 6.19 and a quarter, down 39 and a quarter. September at 5.86 and a half, down 25 and a half, and next year's December at 5.65 and three quarters, down 17 and three quarters. November beans $11.79, down 51. January at 11.89 and a half, down 51 and three quarters. March futures 11.98 and a quarter, down 51 and a half, and the May beans at $12.04 and a half cents, down 51 and a quarter. Next year's November at $11.94 and a half, down 45. Bean meal finished the October at 304.70, 12.20 lower, and the bean oil at 49.95, down $1.68. Live cattle futures finished the October's at 122.15, up $1.75. October feeders at 140.52 and a half, $1.12 and a half higher, and the lean hogs for the day, $93.37 and a half cents, up the $3 limit. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, November contract, $79, down just about $3 for the day. And the ethanol at $2.48 and a half, down 6 2/10 of a cent. Natural gas at $3.67 and 2 cents, down 7 1/2 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 2 3/10 of a cent lower, $2.79 and 4 cents. And the gold futures for the afternoon at $1,620.40 an ounce, up $4.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 174 points at 10,980, and the dollar at 78.58. is up 0.55 for the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area, as it comes from the National Weather Service this afternoon, says we'll see sunny skies yet, a high of 65 degrees, breezy north-northwest winds around 21 miles an hour, though gust all the way to 31. It is an absolutely gorgeous afternoon in central Illinois today. Tonight, partly cloudy, patchy frost, that after 4 a.m. in the morning. Otherwise, mostly clear with a low of 37 degrees this evening, north winds between 7 and 11, and tomorrow, patchy frost before 7 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny, a high of 60 degrees tomorrow, north-northwest winds at 8 to 13, they'll gust all the way to 17. Saturday night, patchy frost after 1 a.m., otherwise mostly clear, a low of 35 degrees, north-northwest winds at about 3 to 7 miles an hour. Sunday, as we start the week, sunny, a high of 66 degrees, northwest winds at 3 to 6. Sunday night, clear and cool, a 43-degree low. And Monday, as we start the work week, sunny and a high of 73 degrees. Monday night, mostly clear, a 49-degree low. Tuesday, sunny and 78. Tuesday night, clear and 52. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 79 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
How was your day, dude?
Well, it was a good day, except there was a lot of yelling on the other end of the phone.
They didn't like USDA this morning, did they not? I mean, the quarterly grain stocks, the last report for the year, the fourth quarter comes out. This tells us exactly what's left in the bin or the pantry, depending on how you want to look at it, from last year's crop. And they gave us a 1.128 billion bushel number, and that was up pretty sharply.
It was, but I mean, I will have to side with the producers on this one as far as did this warrant the type of price reaction we saw on the trade today, and I just flat out didn't see it that way, Todd. In fact, if I didn't fear that we could have another repeat of the 08 financial market collapse and credit problems that we endured and the loss of trade that we saw in 09 as a result of the 08 collapse, if I wasn't fearful of that, I would be saying this is undervalued. In fact, the analysis right now that I do would say we're under the three-month undervalue level in both corn and beans, and I'm seriously consider kicking around the idea of next week coming in and starting to book some feed needs for both soy meal and corn. I do fear the 08 scenario, and I don't want to push the producers, the corn and bean producers, into re-ownership positions of sales they've already made because of that 08 scenario redeveloping. And so I'm probably going to have to push some more hedges out. So feed guys, I'm probably going to scale down buy next week with the idea that, okay, known cost calls are much wiser than anything unlimited. If those calls don't work, then we'll be, again, sharply lower because of the 08 scenario panning out. Same with the corn producers and the bean producers. If we have puts in place for an 08 scenario, we can afford that, and the idea would be, if those puts don't work out, then we're going to make that up along with the futures price. We're going to make up that put loss, and the basis should help us pick up that loss as well if the yields start to come in a little bit lower on the later planted corn.
Now, I was traveling during the day to Peoria and back. There were a number of combines, both in the corn and the soybeans. I really didn't get a chance to follow up on what was happening with the reports, and we'll talk more, you and I and Daryl Good and a couple of others during Commodity Week this afternoon about those numbers that came out from the United States Department of Agriculture. But Dave Dickey tells me he had some conversations, and it seems to land on DDG. Coming back into the livestock feed as one of the ways potentially that the number of corn bushels managed to stay so high. Do you think that's right?
Well, yeah, I don't have any disagreements with the report at face value as far as the extra 166 million extra corn bushels that we found. I just feel like that the market, from a supply-demand standpoint, has more than factored in an increase like that. Because of the outside markets being so ugly and nasty to us. In other words, in the last 11 days, South Korea has bought about 15 cargoes of corn, totaling about 840,000 metric tons. We've seen the quarterly hogs and pigs report suggest that we're going to continue with a very strong livestock feeding base of support for the next 3 to 4 months. Ethanol makers are back in the green. It looks like pretty much substantially close to where they were at the old highs, probably making around 50 cents a gallon from some of the private numbers that I've been looking at. I guess my only issue with today's report was there wasn't enough information in the supply-demand numbers to feed the bear to the point where the corn needed to go limit down. I would rather think that the macro fundamentals, the commodity index funds, and I'll give you a good example. What I look at is I saw in the Financial Times today that emerging market fund withdrawals, whether it was bond funds or equity funds, money pulled out of emerging markets last week was the biggest since records were kept by the people that track it, going all the way back to 2004. That's the kind of stuff, and the fact that the copper has dropped about 25% compared to last year's level. It dropped 24%. Just in this past quarter, you know, July, August, SEP. I guess my mindset would be this is a macro issue, and if it were only the micro fundamentals, even with today's report, I think we've caught demand, and we're seeing demand come back in both corn and beans substantially on this price break, and I think our supplies are still relatively tight historically, so it doesn't justify what we did today.
Okay, it doesn't justify it. Still, you want to be a scaled-down buyer of grains for your livestock users, right?
Yes.
Okay. And if they're going to do that, I suppose you think that this market's going to turn at some place.
Well, it goes back to the profit side. We're getting close to $300 a ton on meal in the cash market, and so I wouldn't mind buying a third of my meal next week. I think that's the recommendation I'm going to make. And for corn hedgers, I think the basis, or the feed hedgers for needing to buy corn, if you're looking at a 35-plus cent basis after this type of a futures price drop, you're getting down there to levels, closer to 550, 560 for cash corn. That, to me, seems like a good place to start buying and locking in some needs. I think that's what I'm getting at, is from a profitability standpoint, and we're back up to new two-month highs in hogs, and cattle were able to sustain really good gains this week as well. So just from a standpoint of profitability, this seems a very good time period to be in the livestock sector. I don't want something to come in to mess that up.
Wait, now hold it just a second. I know basis is a local game, but I'm thinking, I talked to my brother this morning in Logan County and near Springfield, Illinois, and corn was 12 under. You're talking about 35 under. And then if you go to Ohio, we were talking just yesterday about 70 under. I know it's a local game, but has basis really widened out today?
Well, I'm not just saying today. I'm saying over the past 2 weeks. And I think if you are dealing with the situation where you're close to 550 or 560 corn in this part of the listening area, that's where I would say this is a good place to start.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And that's for producers, who end users.
Exactly right. That's for the livestock feeders.
So the producer, the grain producer, corn and soybeans, you're not too worried about them at this point? You think this market will give them another opportunity, but the market's not telling them to store at this point either.
Well, it has been with the spreading. I mean, look at the Dease corn was down 40, but the July, was down 39 as well, but the September was only down 25. And so we have seen an immense premium put back into the back end. So we are going back to a carrying charge market. The first 3 months, you're right, the first 3 months we probably haven't added much, but
right.
Once you get into May, June, July, then it starts to make money again for you, I think.
Yeah,
for the corn and bean producers, I am worried about a 2008 scenario redeveloping. And that's where, even after this kind of a price break, that the bought puts, I think, make a lot of sense. And the first question I ask myself when I come up with this kind of a strategy, are you crazy? Do you really want to do this after the kind of price break that we've seen? Do you really want to push this out there to producers? And what I went back and looked at was where we were in June of 08 at 782 Dease corn. By the end of September, we were down to 454. And by the 1st of December of 08, we were down below $3. Between September and December, we lost another 35% off the corn price, and we lost another 20% off the November bean price. So my take on it is that, yes, if we have another 2008 and the dollar makes another strong move higher on the European crisis or whatever it may be, we do need to have hedges in place because there's still a lot of money on the table. And if I'm wrong and I'm spending 20 to 25 cents on some corn and bean puts, I think I can make that up with basis appreciation, with my bins, and with a sharp futures rally.
Okay. Once we get out to June and July, let me ask you a different question, because once we get out to June and July, if the crop is no bigger than it is at this point, and we don't lose acreage when we get to the October 12 crop production report, not saying that this thing gets bigger, but if it's that size, we'll be short crop, won't we, do you think?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I think that's where today's report, going back to it, we came in with a 214 million bushel or 215 million bushel September 1 stocks for beans. We're right back with that 10 million bushel break or reduction. We're right back close to where we were 60 days ago as far as having enough beans to get into the South American production. And we have La Nina, an issue with La Nina down there in South America. So if USDA doesn't bring us a big yield increase or a substantial yield increase in the soybeans and don't take the demand down, I think that's where you're right back to where this is why I think that for the three-month time period, you're undervaluing beans right now.
Okay. Any final word on either crop or on wheat?
I would say the wheat market is starting to show its tendency to want to try and bottom first. And here again, the report today would suggest to me that we're going to see wheat go at a more substantial premium to the corn. The lead month wheat corn spread closed at about 17 cents. I think we'll go back above 50 to 60 cents by the time we get to Christmas time. that is friendly for the corn because I think that'll bring the demand back to the corn at the wheat's expense. So I would look for that wheat to be, along with copper, one of the key drivers to calling a market low first.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Talk to you later.
Yep, we'll see you for Commodity Week. That's Mike Zuzolo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
The Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our Commodity Week program posted not long after 6 o'clock this evening. Actually, probably before that because we're going to record just a bit early. Our guest today, Novi Ag economist Daryl Good. Now, up next, if you live in a city, you may take broadband internet service for granted, something as close as the free Wi-Fi service at your local coffee shop. But in many rural areas, broadband service is hard or even impossible to obtain. The problem was a topic of a recent congressional field hearing in Springfield, as Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows reports.
As an employee for eGrain, which specializes in electronic documents for agribusiness, Drew Earls understands the importance of a good internet connection. But he says that's not what he gets at his home in the central Illinois countryside, where he relies on service from a wireless transmitter mounted on the grain elevator in nearby Mechanicsburg.
It'd be a little less than broadband, I'd say. You know, at times it's comparable to dial-up, just depending on the traffic. You know, if you catch it early in the morning, then you can usually get some things done and view some things.
Justin Green, who grows corn and soybeans near Arthur, has it a bit easier with a wireless connection to the DSL service at his parents' house. Green says people working in agriculture need reliable internet service as much as anyone else.
A lot of our business is done utilizing the internet and email. A lot of our commodities markets and trading and access to information and communications with landowners and other businesses. A lot of that's done via email.
Earls and Green spoke at the booth they manned for the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation at the Illinois News Broadcasters Association convention in Springfield. But their comments could as easily have been made across town at the University of Illinois Springfield campus. There, Illinois Congressman Tim Johnson and other members of the House Subcommittee on Rural Development were hearing testimony on rural broadband service. Among those testifying, Sue Campbell, the CEO for Community Memorial Hospital in Staunton. She worked with a local internet provider to get 5 megabytes of broadband service for her hospital, needed for everything from transmitting electronic medical records to supplementing their limited staff with doctors who consult from off-site. But Campbell said her hospital will soon need a service upgrade.
As equipment upgrades have come along, it all requires a connectivity of greater broadband width. And it won't be too long before we're going to have to consider doubling our broadband width from 5 megs up to 10.
Rural America is well behind the country's urban areas when it comes to access to broadband internet service. Les Fowler is with the McDonough Telephone Cooperative, which has managed to bring fiber-based broadband service to parts of western Illinois. But Fowler's co-op is not for profit. He told the subcommittee there's just not much money for the private sector to make in rural broadband.
There's not going to be a huge opportunity for a lot of profit taking in those scenarios. So I think it's going to take a jump start from the public sector to get this going.
In fact, Fowler says McDonough Telephone's broadband service wouldn't be possible without a rural utility service loan funded by the federal farm bill, which is up for reauthorization. Fowler says the co-op is applying for its second loan through the program, a process that has so far taken 2 years. Congressman Tim Johnson says bureaucratic problems have left much of the available money unspent.
No, in some cases, only 5% of it has actually emerged from the application process to be used. So upwards of 90% hasn't been. There's a limited amount of dollars to go around, and We need to make sure that rural America, small-town America, gets its share.
Johnson says efforts to reduce the federal deficit will mean less money for rural broadband service next year. So he hopes the subcommittee he chairs can use the Farm Bill rulemaking process to make the loan program more efficient. The Urbana Republican says addressing the broadband shortage is just one way to reverse the population decline in rural America. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. I'm Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is on the phone line to take up the cash grain market with us. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Are you finally busy there in your part of the world?
We are finally busy at Ludlow. If you get any further north, it's still quiet.
Are they happy or are they just busy and frowning today?
We're trying to keep them not looking at the screen because things are more pleasant that way. We've got it covered up and claiming that we've got a power outage.
Yeah, there you go. That probably, they're still asking you.
Yeah.
Some are they wanting to store at this point now, or are they selling fresh to you across the scale still?
No, I think we're going to see stuff get put away. We're filling, you know, right now it's early enough that we're still filling contracts. When that gets done, I think that we're going to see a lot more getting put away for a while and see what happens.
You doing both crops?
Just corn right now, soybeans maybe later this afternoon, probably tomorrow afternoon we'll get in and start to be able to do some beans. There's an awful lot of beans that look like they're ready or almost ready to go. They've just been a little bit too tough before the rains.
And what is the corn crop like in your area?
Better than expected, not as good as last year. Right here in extreme northern Champaign County, 100 to 145 bushel an acre.
And then you've got elevators to the west. How did they do, and what's been happening there?
Anything further? Well, west, the people we work with over in, around the Bloomington area, mm-hmm. their yields are quite a bit better than us. And then you get south of Decatur, again, better than us, down from last year. They've seen some problems, but better than what we're seeing.
Did you take protection this morning?
20 cents on corn and 10 on soybeans.
And your basis is what at this time?
Right now we're at 10 under.
Yeah, so the basis is still really tight.
Pretty stemmy on beans. Maybe we can see a couple short-term pops, but that's a pretty good number. I think we'll see the market, though, just really flatten out post-harvest.
All right, and what are your expectations for your bids for the day, then?
We are at 583 on nearby corn, 1151 on soybeans. Hard to believe a couple months ago we hit our $8 corn offers.
Yeah, indeed. All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. That is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in for our Commodity Week program if you get the opportunity. We'll have it posted to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening, probably before that, because we're going to record a bit earlier. Our guest will be ag economist from the University of Illinois, Darrell Good. Back in a couple of minutes for some of you. Then we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. The rest of you have a great afternoon.
It's National Mulled Cider Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, William Wrigley Jr. was born. An American salesman and manufacturer, he started out as a traveling salesman at the age of 13, selling soap for his father's company. At age 30, he left his father's soap factory and moved to Chicago, where he began manufacturing soap and including free baking powder as an incentive. When baking powder proved more popular than soap, he switched to offering baking powder with chewing gum as an incentive. And then you guessed it, the chewing gum proved widely popular, and Wrigley's Chewing Gum was born. In 1958, pie plates being sailed around among employees at the Frisbee Baking Company at Yale University became the inspiration for the Whammo Standby. In 1962, the United Farm Workers Union was founded by Cesar Chavez. And in 2004, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed into law a bill that bans the production and sale of foie gras. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center joins us to take up the weather forecast for the Midwest. But, Steve, I think we'll get right to the important stuff because it's homecoming here at the University of Illinois, 11 o'clock a.m. kickoff tomorrow for the homecoming football game at Memorial Stadium against Northwestern. What kind of temps and weather can we expect?
Well, it's going to be a cool morning tomorrow, that's for sure. Early tailgaters will be out there in the 40s, and it'll be in the 50s probably at kickoff and warming into the low 60s during the game. So it should be a great fall day for football, not just here in Champaign-Urbana, but throughout the Midwest.
And it'll be kind of nippy. It'll be colder than most had expected or would like, I suppose. And maybe even worse off, they'll have a little bit of a wind, so those folks up at the top of the stadium better bring an extra blanket or two, I would think.
Yeah, it's going to be still a little bit of a breeze tomorrow out of the northwest, probably around 10 to 15, and a little gusty. The winds really won't be dying down till tomorrow night and Sunday a little bit. So that will be certainly something to think about. And then tonight, even with a little bit of a breeze, temperatures will probably get down into the mid and upper 30s, and dew points are currently about 35 here right now. So it's very dry air, and means that nights like this will tend to cool off pretty rapidly.
And they'll go pretty rapidly to the lower side, patchy frost by morning?
There could be some, yes, especially in areas that are somewhat sheltered or low-lying. If out open in the city, in the urban areas, there shouldn't be any problem. But, yeah, there certainly could be some patchy frost tomorrow.
Cooler tomorrow night than tonight even, right?
Tomorrow night it probably will. Yeah, we could actually get down closer to freezing tomorrow night in much of northern and central Illinois. We got a huge high-pressure system moving over us to replace the huge low-pressure system that spent most of the week here. And so winds will become more calm tomorrow night. They'll actually die down, and with radiational cooling, we should see temperatures really plummet tomorrow night.
A big high-pressure system usually tells me we'll have bright and sunny skies for a while. Is that right?
This next week looks like one of the best weeks we're going to have in a while for harvest activities. Be a great week for field work. We'll be gradually warming up in the week. We'll see temperatures climbing into and up through the mid, maybe even upper 70s by the end of the week. Winds picking up, so drying should continue very well. No chance for rain until maybe next weekend when another strong front could come through. So the next 5 to 7 days look really good.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center and brings us a weather forecast on this Friday afternoon for the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org or on your smartphone at m.willag.org. No www in front of that one on your smartphone. We'll post our Commodity Week program there not too long from now. We're recording at 3:30. I would expect you might see that one by as early as 4 o'clock this afternoon. You can pick it up at willag.org or m.willag.org or on one of these radio stations. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.